the sole solution to the problem of man. It entails a fundamental change in the pattern of human thinking and behavior. The undeveloped man thinks arbitrarily, unsystematically, at random, usually under the influence of passing motive or inherent tendencies. When science and technology come, he is taught and trained to think systematically. The man then thinks in terms of science and technology. In terms of science, he thinks, what is it? Along with all the facts and data, such as hows and whys, about that thing or phenomenon. This may be followed by a thought in terms of technology. What is the use of it? What use can we make of it? How can it be turned into use? Here is the thought in terms of science and technology. Beyond this, the man again thinks at random or habitually, influenced by the arising motive or inherent tendencies. Thus, scientific and technological thinking does not make any fundamental change in the man's pattern of thought and behavior, nor development of the thinking man. Moreover, it leaves a wide gap in the thinking process of the man, the gap in which the man's habitual thinking under the influence of inbred motive and tendency will follow and exploit scientific and technological thinking. Then the scientific and technological thought will be at the service of habitual and arbitrary thinking and serves to expand the dimension and magnitude of the latter. The motives or tendencies to be served are usually the three self-centered ones, as mentioned above. Following the first phase of scientific thinking, what, how, and why is it? And the second phase of technological thinking, what is the use of it? How can it be put into use? The man thinks, how can I make use of it to make my profit or for my enjoyment? How can I use it to dominate my neighbors, to show my eminence over them, to put them in my service? How can I use it to win people over to my opinion, to my faith? How can I use it to press them to accept my theory or ideology? The thinking process of the man can be shown in three phases of thinking in terms of science, of technology, and of exploitation. Certainly, it is the third phase of thinking that will direct and control the ensuing behavior and action. Then, beginning with evil, even in the mind, and with evil pervading the whole process, the hope for peace is surely to be frustrated. It is at this point that we need amendment, and the service of religion or the Dhamma is indispensable. This means systematic thinking, free of harmful motives and self-centered tendencies, must continue. Following the first and second phases of scientific and technological thinking, this must continue into the third decisive phase. The man has to be trained to think in terms of ethical or moral values, such as how can this be used to enhance the quality of life or to promote the mutual well-being of mankind. If moral thought has been established as the third phase of the thinking process, moral behavior and actions will follow, completing the whole process and leaving no gap for unwholesome tendencies to influence. Now, the thinking process consists of the three phases of thinking in terms of science, of technology, and of ethical values. Thus, science, technology, and the Dhamma, or religion, are harmoniously integrated even at the level of thought. each finding its proper role, which is complementary to the others. A fundamental change in the pattern of thought and behavior has also been achieved. However, it is not necessary that the thinking process will consist of all these three phases. The scientific and technological phases exemplify Newton's phases in general. They can be dropped or replaced by some or other Newton phases. Only the Dhamma or ethical phase is a necessity. Both moral and immoral tendencies are there in the mind. If the moral ones are not to the fore, the immoral will come to rest. Today, how to think is an emphasis in education. Truly, children and all people alike should be taught how to think. However, many people refer to the how to think only in terms of scientific or intellectual thinking. They do not touch the true nature of the mind and thus leave the thinking process unsound and defective. Their how to think is therefore too short to realize the aim of education, that is, to develop the man so that human problems will be rightly solved and good life will be attained to. With the phase of moral thought, the thinking process of how to think is complete. In this right process of thinking, intellectual thought and moral thought becomes integrated. It is the thought that is both rational and wholesome, really sound. Then how to think means the way of thinking which is in accordance with truth, full of reason and favorable to good life. With this right thought, the true religion is there in the man. He is truly religious. The man is truly religious in the full sense of the term. There is no need of any labor. The right process of thinking as described above is the connection through which mental or emotional development can induce and occasion physical and social development, and through which mental and emotional freedom contribute to the achievement of or even effectuate physical and social freedom. Deeper into the sphere of mental or emotional development is the readjustment or purification of the contents of the mind itself. This aims at the liberation of man from the influence or controlling power of unwholesome motive, impulses, and tendencies, so that there will be none of them to overcome the thinking process. This is centered on the eradication of the three above mentioned self-centered tendencies, namely selfish desire for pleasures and acquisitions, egotistical lust for dominance and power, and clinging to views, faith, and ideology. In place of these three unwholesome qualities, their three opposite ethical values will be developed respectively, namely, first, wise dealing with pleasure and possessions and the resolve to make use of wealth to realize common well-being or wealth for the common will. Secondly, respect for and appreciation of the value of life, the ways of other people, and social order. Thirdly, detached search for truth with the attitude of tolerance and good wishes to those who have different views of the truth. Usually, the three self-centered tendencies are not given up right away by generating the three counter values, and the latter also are usually not directly brought about to replace the former. The destruction of the former and the growth of the latter are, as a rule, the corollaries of the development of such virtues as loving-kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy and equanimity, and the practice of such ethical principles as generosity, kindly speech, life of service, and equality consisting in impartiality and participation. The development of the heart needs a great deal of contribution of the development of wisdom, as the real freedom of the heart can be realized only through the freedom of true knowledge of wisdom. Accordingly, the total eradication of the three self-centered tendencies will be actualized only when one has attained the enlightenment or the full understanding of life. When wisdom is lacking or in the early stages of its development, man has to depend on the three self-centered tendencies for his self-protection, though he has to risk their harmful influence. Once wisdom or true knowledge has been developed to the full, the man living under the guidance of wisdom can do away with all of them. There are so many practices that are helpful to the development of the heart. Some bring about temporary freedom. Others lead to absolute freedom. What distinguishes them is wisdom, through knowledge or insight. Any practice without wisdom as a factor can help achieve only temporary freedom. This is evident in the practice of meditation. Generally speaking, there are two kinds of meditation: calming meditation and insight meditation. Calming meditation with concentration as its essence leads to temporary freedom. Insight meditation, in which knowledge of the true nature of things is the guiding principle, makes possible the absolute freedom. Wherever is freedom, there are peace and happiness. Along with temporary freedom come temporary peace and happiness. Inseparable from absolute freedom are perfect peace and happiness. The really happy man is in the real possession of happiness as it is inside himself. If he is provided with pleasure, he enjoys happiness to the full. If he is deprived of pleasure, or if some misfortune befall him, he can still find happiness. The plaster of unhappiness does not have any real effect on him. Only the really happy man has real peace. Only the man who has peace can be really happy. The man who has happiness radiates happiness. The man who has peace diffuses peace. The man who has no peace of mind tends to break peace in his family, among neighbors, wherever he is. The man who is in peace with himself naturally and automatically lives in peace with everyone. This is the happy and peaceful man in the full sense of the term. His peace and happiness are true to life. And it is this really happy and peaceful man that is the really developed man. He is really educated. The development that makes this free, peaceful, and happy man is entitled to the term peace education. In order to achieve freedom, peace, and happiness for man and his society, we need the interrelated and interdependent service of the four spheres of development, and also the interrelated and interdependent fulfillment of the four levels of freedom. In the process of successful development, we have to deal wisely with the two principal domains that affect man's life, that is, the inner world of the man himself and the outer physical world. Success in the solution of problems and the creation of peace lies in the right understanding and proper recognition of the relationship between the two domains and of the extent and limitations of the roles and contribution capabilities of each of them, and in action in accordance therewith. Regarding the outer world, we have to appreciate the roles of science and technology and the various social institutions in the process of development that leads to freedom. We must accept that science and technology, rightly and wisely used, can be complementary to the Dhamma or religion in carrying out physical development to achieve physical freedom. Effective and efficient social, economic, and political systems and organizations are indispensable if social development is ever to effectuate social freedom. However, it seems that today we already have so abundant a supply of these physical and social tools of development that there is a problem of misusing them, and people being unprepared for the wise or right use of them get into more troubles rather than benefit from them. Now, we should stop giving them priority. Although some among us should go on with the job of improving and advancing science, technology, and social, economic, and political systems, sufficient attention should be paid to the comparatively long neglected task of developing the man. The development of man should be our priority of today. The development or education of man is a unique task. It is the task of and for a specific life of a man. Unlike other fields of human activities, where the wealth of experiences and achievements of former generations can be handed down as cultural heritage to a later generation, and a later generation can make use of that heap of accumulations as the step on which they climb further up the ladder of civilization without necessity to start up anew from the ground. The development or education of man is the matter for a specific life. It has to be started anew from the ground up to the top of the ladder in the span of each and every life. In considering the fact that man is the creator, the central figure, and the sufferer or enjoyer of all problems and their solution, this task is of even greater importance. Peace and happiness of the man are the foundation of peace and happiness of the whole world. Education for the promotion of peace is therefore one of the most important tasks to undertake. Really, it is education or the development of man that is the prerequisite for peace. If this right education has been fully and thoroughly carried out, the International Year in Need of Peace will surely be turned into the real International Year of Peace, when peace, happiness, and freedom prevail all over the world. Or, as this year of 1986 is going to end soon, let us hope that it will be the year when the world begins to move in the right direction towards peace. Also, let every one of us take some action to turn hope into reality. To be practical, the first action to take is to make our own mind happy and peaceful, and then share our peace and happiness with all other people we come in contact with. May all be happy and peaceful, and their mental, verbal, and physical actions be contributions to the creation of the long years of peace to come. Peace be unto you and to all beings. Thank you.
Considering that the paper had not been distributed beforehand, and the presentation has been so effective and forceful, so I have decided to let the speaker go on and use the time that we should have enjoyed the coffee. So what is at the expense of my decision is the coffee break. I think it was a huge mind doing so. I wonder, we have run over time now, if you have any questions, since we have really the man of peace in the real sense of the word here, and his resourcefulness. If you want to use it, I think we can use a couple of minutes for that. If not, then on behalf of the audience, I must raise my hands. It is not our custom, a Buddhist custom, to give a big warm hands to a monk. But I would nevertheless ask the audience to use your hand instead of forcing one hand against the other, forcing and make noise. Please place your hand together gently, or should I say peacefully, and raise it in recognition, in acknowledgement for our appreciation. Should we do it all together?
To your most reverend, they just give you on words to express our gratefulness and our appreciation of your presence with us this afternoon. It's really more than a speech, it's a preaching, really. And the preaching will be distributed at the end of the conference, I mean after the closing remarks, so please don't leave. And many works of his has been translated into English and will be published soon by Yale University Press. But for the time being, I have one book in Thai, See America and Solve Problems in Thailand. And one chapter is something that cannot be exported to America. So we'd like to announce this in Thai. สำหรับท่านที่สนใจนะคะติดต่อได้ที่คุณสวัสดิ์ราภานันท์อยู่ที่นี่นะคะเบอร์โทรศัพท์377-8364ที่จะสั่งจองหนังสือที่ได้ค่ะคุณสวัสดิ์อยู่ที่นี่ท่านยกมือนิดนึงค่ะ And I'm afraid that some of you may be carried away by his preaching and may seek your ownindividual peaceful path and may not come back for the group discussion, group reports. So I make some announcement today, now. Roland and Jennifer Doss, please come for an important message for you at the Secretariat. And tomorrow morning for the Wiman Meg tour, come to the Rector's office at 8 or here at half past 8 in front of the Asia Hotel.Either 8 at the Rector Office, Jurangkorn University, or 8:30 here. And in the afternoon, for those who sign up for Jurang campus tour, come here at 1:30 or 1:45 at Chiba for campus tour tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow morning in my name. And to avoid confusion, if you go out and turn left, you'll see your refreshment. Thank you.
Shall we have 15 minutes break or something?
Yes.
The meeting would be reconvened
yes.
at, I guess, at
yes. a quarter to four. Please come back at a quarter to four.
And
so we have only 15 minutes.
And this is bad news, unfortunately. The chairperson should not be the same cruise. Thank you very much.